Good morning. Up right now on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville, it's the Mind and Heart Show. For the next hour, it's thoughts and feelings and the way they affect our lives and the world we live in. The phone number in the studio is 434-284-9470. Now here's your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier.
Good morning, Charlottesville, and welcome to the Mind and Heart Show. I am your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. We're here every Saturday morning from 9 until 10 a.m., and our show deals with all matters of the mind and heart, including mental health, stress, families, transitions, parenting, and the like. Please join us this morning. You can visit our Facebook page and post a question or a comment. It's Mind and Heart Show. Or you can send us a tweet at @mindheartwpvc. Or email us at mindheartwpvc@gmail.com. You can stream the show live today at the station website, which is 947wpvc.org, 947wpvc.org. In addition, by Monday, the podcast of today's show will be available on cvillepodcast.com. That's cvillepodcast.com. And just put in Mind and Heart Show, and the today's interview will be available for streaming. Joined in the studio by our producer this morning, Morgan Geyer, who's keeping things running smoothly for us. So thank you, Morgan. I'm very pleased to welcome this morning to the show Barbara Barrett. Barbara is the author of A Life of Never Evers, Making the World a Better Place, in which she talks about the experience of raising her daughter, Lena Ray, who was a special needs individual. So welcome, Barbara. Thanks so much for coming in this morning.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It's great to be here. And a subject that I really love to talk about is my daughter, Lena Ray.
That's great. Thank you. So just tell us a little bit about yourself, about your background and job history, whatever might be interesting, as well as your child.
Well, I'm not sure how it'll be interesting, but I try to keep it kind of focused to what's in my book. But I was born and raised in Waynesboro, lived there all my life, except for a short period when I was about 5 years old. We lived in Whitehall, where my father was a manager for a farm out there. And then we moved to the big city of Waynesboro. So I went to all the elementary schools in Waynesboro and graduated from Waynesboro High School, which is your and my alma mater.
Right.
I graduated in 1964. And in December of that year, I married Tommy Fretwell, Lena's father. And we were married for 6 years before we decided to have a child. So we got lucky, and we went through all the usual things that most expecting parents go through, making all the plans of what our life was going to be like and dreaming about what our child was going to be like and whatever. And finally, on December 4th, 1970, the most beautiful baby I had ever seen in my life joined us. And I remember the first time I held her in my arms, doing the usual inspection of counting toes and fingers and whatever. And she had really dark, curly hair and big brown eyes. And so everything just seemed to really go well. Well, after we got home, she started having a lot of feeding problems and a lot of constant crying.
Is that what you first noticed that seemed a bit unusual?
Well, yes, but she was born breech butt first. Okay. So I just figured she was probably pretty tired, because I was, because I had been in hard labor for over 13 hours. But anyway, so we were in and out of the pediatrician's office real often and could not figure out why she kept the constant crying and was having trouble feeding and whatever. So at about 2 months, the doctor decided that they were going to hospitalize her and run tests and whatever at the local Waynesboro Hospital.
Dr. Kappas, right. Dr. Bill Kappas, her pediatrician,
right,
who was a long time pediatrician in Waynesboro.
Right, and a friend and advocate for people with disabilities.
Right.
But this was in the 70s, remember? And so he says, okay, we're going to put her in the hospital for a few days. And by the way, you can't come to the hospital to see her. And I'm going, you're taking my two-month-old baby away from me, and I can't go see her. So he says, well, her father can come, but you can't come, and I don't want anybody else coming.
What was that about?
Well, at the time, I really didn't know, but I figured somebody was trying to tell me that was really her problem, and I was a bad parent, a bad mother. So they kept her for probably 5 days, run all kinds of tests.
Was this over in Charlottesville or in Waynesboro?
No, this is Waynesboro Local Community Hospital.
Okay.
Right. So she finally came home, and the report was that she had she was small in size. They suspected there was some cranial problems and whatever. So they proved to me that it wasn't my fault because they couldn't get her to stop crying and mm-hmm. seemed to be in pain at all the time. So that was a relief. And then at probably about 3 months, they decided to change her formula. And it just seemed like that was the magic pill because 3 months to the very day, she stopped crying.
Okay. And when she was in the hospital, what they were doing, tests? Or, I mean, that seems
test
like an odd
and,
thing.
Well, I read in one of his medical reports on her that he had diagnosed me as having parentotomy or tactomy or something like that, which meant that mother was the problem.
In those days, unfortunately, there was a tendency, you know, whether it was with autism or developmental delays, to blame the mom.
Right. And so,
which was such a disservice.
Yes. And I go into a lot more detail in my book, which I hope everybody will rush out or get on their
computers. Recommend it highly. I read it last week. It's a wonderful book, and it really is a beautiful story of you and Lena and insights into having a developmentally delayed child.
Yes. Well, when Lena passed away in February of 2000, she was 29 years old. And when she passed away, I started getting all these wonderful letters and notes from people who knew her and had shared time with her that told me how much she had meant to them and what difference she had made in their lives and et cetera, et cetera. So in the back of my mind, I thought, well, you know, this is something I want to keep. So when the computers finally came to be, I did copy all of them into my computer, and they sat as files in my computer for almost 14 years before I really made myself sit down and think about what I wanted to do with them.
Okay.
But
was that the beginning of the book, the files?
Well, yes. My thing was I really just wanted to have something in print that kept those pieces of mail or comments from people for me to have to read when it really got to me because she was no longer with me.
Okay.
But anyway, I know I probably use the word, let's say when she was 18 months old, she was in Dr. Kappas's office for her well baby checkup, which is one of those routines with inoculation type things. And she had just been given a shot by the nurse. So I'm standing in the middle of the exam room holding this baby that is not real happy and making a lot of noise. And in walked the doctor and didn't say hi, nothing. But when he walked in the door, I could see he was looking at her chart.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, he didn't say hello, how are you, or anything. He looked up at me and he says, I don't know if you realize it or not, but there's something wrong with your child.
Golly.
So my first thought was, oh, my God, my child is dying. And that's all that's where my brain went. And I started thinking of all these questions like, what have I done wrong? Why is it my fault? All this stuff. And, well, finally, he kept on talking the whole time that I'm going into this panic mode until I heard him say the words mental retardation.
And do you know on what basis he was making that? I mean, it seems young. I mean, was she not making her developmental milestones?
Exactly.
With verbalization or walking or all the things they look at?
Yeah. In those days, when a new mother came home from the hospital with a new baby, the local mental health association had a monthly newsletter and it was from Pierre the Pelican, not the stork, but the pelican. And it gave parents tips to what they expect to see their baby doing as each month as it aged.
Okay.
Well, for the first couple of months, I thought this was wonderful because, you know, everything seemed to be okay. But then they started saying to me way too loudly, there's something wrong. Lena's not doing all these things that she should be doing. So,
and were you noticing that at home as well, Barbara?
Well, yeah, but you're...
You're a new mom, so you don't have anything to compare it to.
Well, at some point, I realized that the dream that we had as her parents of what she would be like as a child and growing up died when the moment we were told she had a disability. And I've since learned that anybody who loses a loved one goes through that. Some say five, some say seven stages of grief.
Grief, yes.
And so I thought, okay. So I think I was in the, well, first we had the shock. And then I was in denial.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was trying to think, okay, whose fault is it?
Mm-hmm.
Is it my fault? Is it something I've done? Is it her dad's fault? Blah, 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 and all this stuff. That was a wake-up call. But when those newsletters kept saying to me loudly, she's not doing this, she's not doing this, I just started putting them in the trash can when they came in the mail.
I couldn't bear to read them.
So, and still, I was still probably trying to deny it. And I just kept thinking, well, she had a really rough time coming into the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, she needs to have some time.
To catch up.
Yeah. Well, it didn't.
Wouldn't happen.
But like I said, at 3 months with the change of a formula, she
was better. Yeah.
So that gave me positive reinforcement. But I got to the point where I also belonged to a mother's club, mm-hmm. and I saw how other babies looked and acted.
Would you bring your child to the meetings? Did everyone bring
a couple of the social things I did?
Uh huh.
But and was one. I really at that point it was easy not to. She didn't look like there was anything wrong with her. She was a very normal-looking child. But I saw how other babies were, and I noticed that she could not sit up straight by herself. In fact, we literally had to tie her in her high chair to feed her. But she loved when it was time to feed. She loved the baby food, and her favorite was called Blueberry Buckle, and she loved to set and blow purple bubbles. But then her other favorite food was spinach. Huh. And from the day that from her was a baby, she loved spinach. And it eventually she found Popeye, discovered Popeye, so she thought that was wonderful because, you know, Popeye ate spinach. And she's probably one of the few children in the world that I had to pack spinach in her lunch to go to school.
Barbara, let me ask you, I've known in my career so many parents, when they get this kind of news, just sort of collapse under the weight of it. It is such a blow, as you said, to your dreams, to your aspirations. But you really stepped up for Lena. And I'm just curious, and I think our listeners would be curious to know, how did you do that?
Well, all I knew is... She did not come into this world asking to be a person with mental retardation.
Right.
I knew it wasn't her fault.
Right.
And so I truly believe, I'm not a very church-going person, but I always have believed that God has a reason for everything. So I kept telling myself that there is a reason for this, there's a reason for this. And finally I thought, okay, this was way before computers, and so I did everything, looked everywhere I could, to try to find out information about people with mental retardation. And I'm not going to apologize to people who are offended by those terms, because several years ago, national movement was to get rid of the R word.
Right.
But what I didn't understand for these people were they really created a expectation with self-advocates who were higher functioning, that changing that word was going to make them a different person, mm-hmm. quote, unquote. And that was sad, that the money, the time, and the effort that was spent to promote the program to get rid of the R word could have been so better used to promote a more positive and accepting view of the world for people with mental retardation, which today is called an intellectual disability.
Right.
But coming down the pike, I've been told it's all going to be now developmental disability.
Right. I mean, it changes every couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other thing that you talk about in the book, and I know from professional experience, is that this kind of challenge can really put a strain on a marriage. And, you know, in your book, you talk about in some ways how your then husband really reacted quite differently to the diagnosis. And eventually, I'm guessing that it put quite a strain on your marriage.
It did, but we were married for 22 years. And I will say he was the love of my life, the first man that I ever remember falling in love with. And like I said, for 6 years, it was just him and me until Lena arrived on the scene. And I read somewhere or heard somewhere that the divorce rate of parents with children with a disability was very high.
It's true.
And I remember chuckling, thinking, oh, that'll never happen to me. Well, it did. And until this past year, when I was having a conversation with Lena's father about writing the book, he finally admitted to me that he had felt neglected because I had been paying so much attention to Lena Ray. Well, for some reason, I had the thought in my mind that, well, he's a grown man. He can take care of him himself. But here's a baby, a child that does not have the skills to take care of herself. So I guess I focused on that part of it. And I remember telling her one day and to myself, I said, I promise to you to be the best mother I can possibly be.
Yeah.
And
well, and that's as it should have been and as it ideally is. But you're right. I mean, it does. You know, you only have so much emotional energy, and the fact that you need it necessarily to direct it to her, I think that's often the cause of strain in a marriage with a special needs child.
I would say if you needed one word, it would be lack of communication.
Okay.
Because if he had told me how he was feeling, then we could have dealt with it, or I could have dealt with it one way or the other. But he didn't. Many years later, just about 30 years later, he tells me why we got a divorce. So,
were you surprised when you had that conversation?
Yes. In fact, I was speechless for several minutes, and then I'm sitting there. I thought, well, okay, so he's saying that, and I'm thinking, well, I guess I can't say that he was wrong. It wasn't my intention. And I definitely would have done something differently if he had only said that's what he was feeling.
Yeah.
But as I was married to him for over 22 years, I knew he was a person or a man who was not very comfortable sharing his feelings.
Yeah, yeah.
You wouldn't know what that's about, would you?
No, not at all. So when did you begin to build the support system for Lena, and sort of talk us through that process a little bit in terms of what resources were there or were not there, perhaps, and just how that kind of evolved?
Okay, when she was about age two, Dr. Kappas introduced me to two mothers that had children that were mentally retarded, and he arranged for us to meet and get to know each other, and I spent several hours in their houses, or in one of their houses, and met their children. One had a daughter, Elizabeth. The other one had a son named Dwayne. And they answered every question I could possibly think of. Mm. And I figured, you know, what better resource than somebody who's been where I am?
Yeah.
And in our conversation, they said, well, we're both members of the local ARC chapter. You need to start going to the meetings. Well, I did. And so since 1972, I have been a member of a local ARC. It was called the Waynesboro Area Association for Mentally Retarded Children.
Right, I remember.
Then it was changed to Citizens.
Citizens, right.
And then there was this big national movement by the National ARC to change, get the words retarded out of it. And so it became ARC, A-R-C. That's it.
you don't say what it means.
No. So you figure, okay, when you say, oh, I'm from the Ark, everybody looks at you like, okay, that's American Red Cross. And then you have to use the words
right.
that at the time was mental retardation. There was no way to get away from it, but yet they thought they were making things better, just like when this passed. Several years that they decided to do away or
change it again.
Get rid of the R word.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, I'm Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. You're listening to the Mind and Heart Show on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're just going to take a quick break here for a moment before we get back to our discussion with Barbara Barrett. Quick check of the weather. It's a little cloudy and cool this morning, about 55 degrees in Charlottesville. And today we're looking at a high of 63 and cloudy, maybe a 20% chance of precipitation, and tomorrow 66 and some showers, so plan accordingly. But give us a moment. We'll be right back with our interview with Barbara Barrett. And we are back, Charlottesville. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Mind and Heart Show on WPVC 94.7. And we are here every Saturday morning at from 9 to 10. I'm your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. A programming note, this Sunday morning, tomorrow morning, the wake-up call with Rick Moore. His guest tomorrow will be Mary Jean Jaggers, and they will talk about her new book, 100 Things to Do in Charlottesville Before You Die. The phone lines will be open for your calls about what she left out and what things just don't rate. That's the wake-up call, Sunday at 11 a.m., only on 94.7 WPVC. The progressive voice of Charlottesville brought to you by the Tiger. Strength is in their fuel, Tiger Fuel. So we're talking this morning with Barbara Barrett about her book, and which is a wonderful story of her life as a mom and her life with her daughter, Lena, who suffered from intellectual disabilities, to use the politically correct term this morning, Barbara. So I wanted to get back to the question that we were talking about before the break, which was building your support network, because this is obviously a challenge that would be really tough to do by yourself, I'm guessing.
It is. And if nothing else, I hope your listeners who might be facing what I faced with dealing with a person with a disability, that you don't have to tackle the world by yourself. There are people out there to help you. I was lucky enough to get connected up with to join the local ARC in Waynesboro. And through that, I met parents, professionals, other advocates that opened the whole world for me, because, like I said, back in the 70s and 80s, there were no computers.
That's right.
And so everything I had to get my information from was either in print, or I went to a workshop or speaking engagement or whatever. Any place I thought that I could find some answers about what I should be doing as Lena Ray's mother, that I remember thinking that I wasn't going to let her disability be her disability or my disability. Like I said before, I promised to her that I was going to be the best mother possible. So I reached out, and luckily I found the right kind of people. But then I have to go back to say it really starts with my mother.
Lena's grandmother.
Yes, my mother and father, Grace, Louise, and Ray Simmons. And she was a fantastic mom. For many years, she was a stay-at-home mom. But then as times went on, she had to go to work to help support four kids. Because I have three sisters. And from the moment they met Lena Ray, they were totally accepting of her. And their children, when they came along, were just totally accepted of her. They treated Lena like she was Lena. No special treatments. I mean, she was down there in the middle of them, even though she was a lot littler than they are. They kind of treated her like she was one of the a toy that they could play with.
Are these her cousins you're talking about?
These are her cousins, and she absolutely loved it. And she loved people, period. And so she really fit in, but I also, the friendships that, and from parents and other advocates and professionals in the disability community that I was a part of were very supportive. And the ARC is, to me, was my lifeline, and with, because of the people and the services they provided. She turned out that she ended up going to a preschool, or really, well, at that time it wasn't a preschool. It was the school for children with mental retardation. I'm sorry, I'm going to use that word because that was the label that Lena was given, in the local church, which it turns out that's where I met your father, Reverend Lou Frazier. He was the pastor there, and he allowed his church during the week to be used to house the school. And from that moment on, he was somebody that I considered to be one of the strongest champions for people with disabilities in our community and even across the state. He served on many boards and committees that dealt with issues that affected all disabilities, not just the mental health sides, but all disabilities.
Yeah, that's very kind of you to say. I mean, I know he had a real passion for working with folks that you know, had challenges in their lives, whether it was substance abuse or intellectual disabilities or mental illness. I mean, he had a tremendous influence on my choice of career, not by telling me to do it, but by the life he lived, and by instilling in me a real sense of wanting to help people.
Yeah. So he introduced me to the, all the right people also. And as far as Gums is concerned, he was one of my mentors. And I loved him so much that when I decided to remarry in 1988, he was the minister that performed this marriage ceremony to my husband Lloyd, who we've been married for 28 years now. And when Lena passed away, he volunteered to conduct a memorial service at her her memorial service, not funeral. I figured Lena would have never wanted to have a funeral, but we had a celebration for her life. In fact, all the background music was Disney songs that she loved.
She loved, you say in the book, she loved Disney songs.
And she had a collection of neckties that she loved to wear. And everybody that was very special, all my sisters and special friends, we all walked into the funeral or into the memorial service with wearing one of her ties. And I had someone tell me that that literally brought tears to their eyes.
I can
to
imagine.
See that.
That's beautiful. Yeah. So as you begin to look around the community again, did you feel like that there were agencies were in place that were adequate to meet her needs, whether school or medical or whatever?
Well, we, like I said, I enrolled her in the special school that the ARC was providing. And
was that Learn More School?
That was Learn More School.
Remember it well.
L-U-R-N-M-O-R.
Remember it well.
Learn More.
Yep.
Yes. And it was had fantastic teachers and aides, and some of the best people that you could imagine where it came into our lives. And she was there, I guess she was probably about 3 years old when she entered there. And so it came time that most kids would enter the public school system. And it just seemed like for some reason, the federal government passed a law called 94-142, which said that every child was entitled to a public education, even those with a disability.
Right.
So the next thing I did was call up the Waynesboro school system and say, where is my child fitting into the so-called school system? Well, they didn't know.
They probably had nothing in place.
They had nothing in place. There were no special ed classes then. So the first year we had a home visiting teacher by the name of Bob Wright. Did you ever meet Bob?
No, didn't meet Bob.
He was fantastic. But anyway, he would come several days a week to work with Lena and then give me some directions of how to carry on with what he was working on. So the next year, I guess which would be the following year, the school system actually created a special ed classroom at an elementary school, Westwood Hills Elementary School, with a teacher and a couple of aides.
And how old was Lena?
She was six.
Six, okay. Yeah. So she was really ready to start school.
It was her the normal thing for children that age to go to school. Well, that worked out real well for several years. And as she aged, I guess she was probably around 11, they decided that they thought it would be a really good idea to move this class room to the Waynesboro High School. Well, in the meantime, I had started working at the high school in their library. But one year, well, the first time I worked there was I was an aide in special ed class.
At the high school?
At the high school for one year. I was on it was a federal grant program, but it ended after that one year.
Okay.
So I was in a classroom with what they, labeled the educable mentally retarded.
EMR, they used to call it.
Yes, excuse me, I've got to have drug water.
Sure.
And I remember thinking that I knew there were two kinds of labels, trainable or educable. And I thought, well, I knew Lena was labeled trainable. And I thought, oh, gosh, if she was only educable things, her life would be so much better. Until I worked in that classroom with those students that knew they were different.
Mm-hmm.
They were reminded of it every time they left that classroom. Or even when they walked into that classroom, they knew they were different. So I kind of got rid of that thought and thought, well, okay. But the one thing I really always wished for Lena that she'd never, ever experience someone making fun of her or putting her down or being mean to her or whatever. And I never, ever saw that happen to Lena except one time. We were walking in the Stanton Mall, and this two large ladies were walking towards us, and Lena had issues with walking, so I figured these people can see us, and there's a child with me, that they will, separate and go around us. Well, they didn't. One of them kind of just shoved Lena and said, "Get out of my way." And my instinct was, well, you better be glad that I don't really want to go to jail. But and luckily, too, she kept walking. So that's the only time I really felt somebody had been mean to my child.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God that I never had to witness it again. If it ever happened, that she never indicated. In fact, she loves people so much that she just assumed everybody loved her.
Boy, that's great. So did she actually move from Westwood to the high school at some point? Where was it a self-contained classroom?
Self-contained classroom. And I had to tell the parents of the children who were in that class that were a lot younger than Lena, because mm-hmm. this is where they put
all the kids,
trainable, retarded kids. So I said, look, this is I can't speak for your child. I'm only speaking for my child. But she's 11 years old, and she'll soon be a teenager. So, she's going to fit right into the high school age group. Plus, a lot of the kids in that her classroom were a lot taller and bigger than the little elementary kids running around the elementary school. But all the parents said, okay, fine. So it was moved. I think when she was about, I guess she'd been there for about 3 years, they had another great idea. Let's move the classroom back to the elementary school. And again, I said, no, she's the age group of the students here at the high school. So it doesn't make sense that she should be going back to where the elementary kids are. So that move got canceled. But the following year, the Waynesboro and the Augusta County school system decided to combine their special ed classes. So that made the numbers of students a lot larger. So they hired 3 special ed teachers and 4 or 5 different aides and moved them to one of those buildings that was built in World War II at the Woodrow Wilson Rehab Center.
Okay, out in Fishersville. I did not realize they moved those classes out there.
A standalone building that if you looked out the front door, you could see Wilson Memorial High School across the road. So they were there Oh, probably for several more years. And
that was, again, all ages, excuse me.
All ages, okay. And all levels of disabilities. And then I remember thinking, you know, being an advocate, I have strong feelings about inclusion and segregation, and
right.
knew this was not the ideal situation for these kids. But I thought, well, let's see how it turns out. Well, it turned out very well. The teachers were fantastic. They made every effort to get the kids out in the community. They even had some of the regular ed, like the PE teacher, come in from the high school and work with the kids. And they had speech therapy and all those different kinds of things. But still, there they were in this standalone building all by themselves.
Did she like school, Barbara?
Oh, she loved school. She loved school. She loved her teachers. She loved the other students. I mean, I had a friend tell me when she passed away that he was sure she was the most world's perfect example of pure joy. I mean, you could wake her up in the middle of the night and she'd come up smiling. And then I would remember my older sister's kids. You don't talk to them anymore. Or when they were little, you didn't talk to them in the morning till after they'd had their cereal or whatever, because they always came out grumpy and whatever. Not her. She was ready for whatever the day was going to present itself.
That's great. In those days, did they have IEPs, which for those of our listeners don't know, is an individual education plan. And when kids are classified in Virginia anyway for public school, they're required to have this very specialized, as it says, individual education plan.
Oh, yes, she did. She had those. And I will say that we had the usual meetings, and I found out that through all of my advocacy efforts, at one point or another, I became known by the people who were working in the school system, the administrators, and the special ed person who was over all the special ed. And I found that there was no reason to go in with your fists raised or to go in mad because it wasn't going to help your child. And we had several different discussions that I voiced my concerns about how things were being done. And I would say that I'd say 100% of the time we worked things out. And that is really very important that you keep the same word, communication. When you're communicating with anybody that has anything to do with your child's life or your loved one's life that has a disability, you need to document, document, document. And I mean, sometimes that makes the person on the other side of the table nervous.
Right.
But that's okay. But I assure you that if you ever get in a situation where you are upset or whatever, or time has passed, you won't remember the exact details.
Right.
And if you've got it written down, you've got proof. And don't sign anything and not get a copy. Always get a copy. Of the IEP, you should have a copy in your hand that has been signed on by all the people who are involved in the process.
Okay.
And if you are having a disagreement with the way the school system is handling your education needs for your child, there are agencies that can help you in the process. And one of them is called the Disability Law Center of Virginia, which used to be VOPA, which is, at the time it was VOPA, Virginia Agency for People with Disability, VOPA, yeah. It was run by, or was operated by the state with federal money. So the state had control over which cases they could have and not have. But 2 years ago, I believe, they became an independent agency, no longer under the government's thumb. But they still operate with federal money, but the state education board could not dictate to them.
And I'm recalling, and correct me if this is wrong, but if you have a special needs child with an IEP, they are actually eligible for services, I think, till age 21. Is that right?
Exactly. Well, 22, really.
22, okay.
In fact, Lena's birthday, since it was in December, she turned 23 the year before she in her last year of school.
Okay.
And graduated at age 23. But before the year she was going to graduate, I remember at the beginning of the school year, I informed the teachers that I expected her to walk across the stage, get her diploma, just like the rest of the 1993 senior class at Wellesley Memorial High School.
That's great.
And she did, and two of her other classmates did too. And that was a first, because before then, the teachers, being this loving and kind as they were, and very sensitive to the other kids, any of the kids that were aging out of the school system, they had a little pretend graduation ceremony with friends and people invited, and then they would have a little party afterwards, whatever. And I thought, that's fine. I understand why you're doing that, but I'm telling you, my child will walk across that stage and get a diploma just like every one of the graduating classes, seniors in class of 1993.
That's great.
But there's one other thing. Just as she was getting up, and she had a little bit of a walking problem, just as she was getting up to go towards the stage, this young man, who at the time I had no idea who he was, but he was a graduating senior, Toby Campbell, got up and took her by the hand and walked her to the stage and helped her up the steps.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Nobody had asked him to do this or anything. And it turned out he was president of the senior class. He was getting all kind of honors and whatever. Now, why he did this, what he just said that he thought she needed help.
That's great. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Mind and Heart Show on WPVC 94.7. I'm your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. We're here every Saturday morning from 9 to 10, and we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back shortly with some more questions for Barbara Barrett, so please stay with us. And we are back. You're listening to the Mind and Heart Show with your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. We're here every Saturday morning from 9 to 10. Couple of programming notes. Please join us next week at 9 on Saturday when my guest will be Denise Lunsford, who was until recently the Commonwealth Attorney for Albemarle County. She served 8 years in that capacity, and we will be talking about her career. We'll be talking about the state of the criminal justice system and many other interesting topics that have to do with the criminal justice system. Quick check of the weather again before we get back to our guest. It is now 55 in Charlottesville and cloudy. We're going to look at a high of 63 today with a possibility about 20% of showers. Oh, forgive me. One other programming note I failed to mention. 2 weeks from today, we will not be on the air. I will be away. And so we'll be back on April, whatever that first Saturday is in April. So just make a note of that. Be sure and listen to this show this morning. You can stream it on cvillepodcast.com if you're just joining us and missed the beginning of the show. So please do that, and I'll also post that on our Facebook page so you can get the link there. So we've got about 15 minutes, and I have way too many questions for our guest today, Barbara
Bear. I have way too many answers.
At some point, you made the decision for Alina to go into an adult home. Tell us about that decision, if you would, Barbara.
Well, when she graduated from high school, it was during the time when the very first waiver slots, and the waiver slot was called an MR waiver, that was funding from the state and the federal government to pay for services that a person would need in the community or wherever they chose to get their services. Well, she got one of the last waivers from the Valley Community Services Board, because by the time we were still living in Waynesboro. Well, after she got it, I remarried and I moved to Crozet, which was halfway between my job and my husband's job at the university. He taught mechanical engineering. But anyway, with that waiver, she could purchase services she needed after she graduated. Well, it turned out that she got the waiver from the Valley CSB, but was going to get the services from Region 10 CSB. So nobody knew how to handle that. So we had to wait until the department decided whether it could be transferred from one CSB to the other. Well, it did. She was the first to have that happen to again. So she was had waiver services. So she started out with in-home services where they came into the home and worked with her, and then they went out in the community and worked. And then it was changed to Community Builders. And then she got an opportunity, or I was asked to allow her to move into a group home with two other ladies that also have mental retardation. And
where was that home? In Waynesboro?
No, this was in Charlottesville. Right. And I can remember the phone call and literally needing to have to sit down to keep from passing out, because it had never crossed my mind. I knew, well, someday maybe I would no longer be around and her father would no longer be around, so she would have to have some place to live. Well, I figured that was way, way off, because this was in 1993. And but then I had been advocating very vocally that people with mental retardation and other disabilities had rights. They had the right to choice. And granted, my Lena wasn't capable of telling me what she really wanted in abstract questions. But, you know, she could say yes or no and whatever, but stuff like that. So I thought, but if I say no to this opportunity, which I'd say, well, that would make me the biggest hypocrite in the world, and I did not want to have that label. So I thought, well, okay, well, we'll try it. I was assured that I would have a say in the program and the staff and all that. So I thought, okay. And I said, well, you know, if we change our mind, then we can always bring her back home. Well, she lived in a group home with these two other ladies here in Charlottesville for almost 5 years before her health started to decline more to the and required for her to be home more with me. So that we lucked out there. So it just it seems like she was always in the right place at the right time for whatever her needs were.
But I guess it was tough when she moved into the group home, because golly, I mean, it left a huge void in your day-to-day life at home.
I felt there was this big massive black hole in the middle of my chest where my heart used to be.
Right.
Because she was, when I woke up in the morning, my first thought was always, what am I going to do for or with Lena today? Because she was a joy to be around. She loved people. I mean, there was nothing that she got upset about, except she really cared about her friends. And I remember one incident, one of her friends got diagnosed with cancer. And this was a lady was a lot older than Lena, that also was mentally retarded, and could see that she was very upset and everybody around her was upset. And Lena was the first time I've ever seen Lena actually probably cry for somebody else. But, you know, so I knew that she would be okay, but I wasn't sure if I would be. But eventually, I made the peace with it. And, in fact, to get to the point where she would either come home and be in my home for the weekends or at her father's for a weekend.
Okay. So, but it probably really benefited her in terms of independence and daily life skills, and I know in some of these homes they really push the individuals to do the maximum they're able to do.
In fact, they also had a program called Community Builders, and they had Lena had a paying job at SNL Securities with a job coach. So I was invited one day to go and watch her work, do her work. I was blown away. Here she was helping do mailings with some kind of adaptive equipment that they at that business had created just for her use.
Golly.
And I mean, she was there. She was doing her work. She was getting a paycheck. And I remember thinking the last year of her school, I knew that at age 14, special ed students were supposed to start getting what was called transitional services.
Right.
But I knew that, okay, there are people in the community who are not disabled who can't find jobs. So how are they going to find jobs for these kids? Well, the teachers in that program made every effort to duplicate certain scenarios. Like they had a room where you could a person could be like in housekeeping. They had some of the kids who actually went out and did some janitorial services. So they made do with what they could. Mm-hmm. But at that time, it really wasn't a priority for the Department of Education.
Right.
At least not what I saw. And I will say, too, to give a plug here, I am now on the Jefferson Area Transitional Council, and they are getting ready to host their Life After School Fair next Saturday.
Yeah, tell us 19th. About that.
It's going to be at K-Tech, and that's on Ryle Road. Mm-hmm. From 8:30 to 12:30, and it is free. And we're hoping to have as many parents and professionals and advocates to even consumers to attend this informational fair. And me and Catherine Lochner, who I just met and just can't believe what an amazing person she is, that we're going to do a workshop about Been There, Done That, to talk about right. our experiences with transition. So there's a lot of work to be done in that area.
That's great. So a couple of things I really wanted us to cover before we run out of time, because obviously we're not going to cover everything that I hoped we would today. But in her 29th year, Lena began to have some health problems. Tell us about that, Barbara.
She was diagnosed at age 18 with congestive heart failure. We spent a summer of taking her back and forth to Dr. Kappas, and because she kept had this constant cough that actually ended up with her throwing up a lot. So we couldn't figure out why or whatever, and he tried out different medications, whatever. And I remember being at some event one night, and he was there, and I just walked up to him and said, look, you're going to have to do something. Something is really wrong with Lena. And he says, okay, come to my office tomorrow, and I'm going to send you over to the hospital to get x-ray, chest x-ray. So we did. We went over to the Waynesboro Hospital, which is right across the road from his office, and they did a chest x-ray. Well, all hell broke loose. I mean, the panic I could see in other people's faces were not very welcomed, but we were given the envelope with the x-rays in it and sent back to his office. He looked at them. He picked up the phone and called our top cardiologist, Tom Gorsuch, and said, you have got to see this patient right now. And we luckily his office was right across the little walkway
right.
from Dr. Kappas's office. So he walked us to Dr. Gorsuch's office. And so he rushed back into the office with the x-ray. And so then we get back there to talk to Dr. Gorsuch. And her heart was 4 times its normal size.
Golly.
That was what was pushing on her stomach and causing all
the cough and the
throwing up and whatever. I remember we had this blue trash can that went everywhere with us. We even went on to see my sister in Florida, and we traveled with the blue trash can. But Dr. Gorsuch put her on some medication. He said, let's see how she does with this. So we went back after a week on the new medication, and nothing had gotten any better. So he started talking about what he was recommending until he got to the word, because of her mental condition, I said, excuse me, you can tell me anything about your treatment for her, but if you mention or bring up the subject of her mental condition again, I will see you in court. And that stopped him in his tracks. But anyway, he said, okay. And I said, I want you to send us to Charlottesville, to cardiology department there.
At UVA.
At UVA. So we made the appointment, and this was Labor Day weekend. And so we went home, and we had to wait until the Labor Day weekend was over. But I could tell it wasn't getting any better.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember calling him up, and in fact, I couldn't get Dr. Gorsuch. I did get doctors. That was another time. But anyway, and so he arranged for us to be immediately put in the hospital at UVA. And we lucked out and got the presidential suite.
Huh?
I don't know. It was just one great big, really fancy room with all kinds of different furniture, but it still had the hospital bed. And I remember when the cardiologist who walked in and who happened to be Dr. Eric Powers, who was also head of the cardiology department at UVA, he walked in and we introduced each other. And he started talking about Lena, and I finally said to him, and when he said something about her capacity, I said, I'm going to tell you the same thing I told Dr. Kappas. If you bring up the issue of her capacity, mental capacity, I will see you in court. And of course, he backed up and said, whoa, that's fine. My wife is a special ed teacher. I understand where you're coming from. And so he turned out to be our savior.
Okay.
And he told me that anybody, well, this was right after she passed away. He said he was amazed that she had lived 11 more years because anybody that had the problem, medical problems that she had, would have been lucky to have made it 5 more years.
Okay. So in 2000, you lost her in 2000.
Right.
And since then, you've continued to be a vocal advocate for folks with whatever we call it.
Yeah. Mental disabilities.
Yes.
But I would say for 2 years after her losing her, I couldn't do anything. I did nothing.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go anywhere. I didn't want to talk to people. All I wanted to do was stay at home.
Well, you did do something. You grieved.
Yeah, I guess, but 2 years. But anyway, but one day I happened to be studying and watching television, and this little voice that I used to call it, I heard say, okay, the world is still not a better place, a very good place for people with disabilities. What are you going to do about it? Get up off your butt and do something. Don't waste what you learned for Lena's life when you can go out and help other people just like her.
So well, that's great. And what a wonderful legacy, you know, that provides for her life, that her mom is still out there pounding the pavement and knocking on doors and calling politicians and doing all the things you have to do.
Oh, yes.
You know, without advocacy, none of this happens. None of these programs happen. None of these opportunities are made available to folks.
And it's
just
it is
so important.
Up to the parents or caregivers of these people to be their voice, because a lot of times they can't.
They can't.
They have no way of getting there or even expressing the needs. So a parent has to own the problem. They need to step up and be the voice.
Right.
And my best suggestion would be to join the ARC of the Piedmont or any local ARC that you might be closer to and become a member.
Thank you, Barbara. So we're about done for today. Our guest today has been Barbara Barrett, the author of A Life of Never Evers. It's available on Amazon. I got my copy there. It's a wonderful book, and it will walk you through her life and her daughter Lena's life, and it's a very inspiring book.
And proceeds go to the local ARC, Piedmont ARC of Augusta.
There you go. So it supports a worthy cause. If you're just joining us, you can hear our whole discussion at SeavillePodcast.com. Please check that out. I'll put that up on our Facebook page in the next day or so. I want to thank Barbara very much for coming in. Regrettably, we didn't get through all our questions, but I think we certainly covered a fair amount of territory here.
Oh, there's so much more to learn. Read my book.
We'll have to get you back. Anyway, stay tuned for a Straight Talk. I think it's going to be a previously aired show as our host Andra Hakes is out with a family illness. And we will be back here next Saturday morning at 9 o'clock when our guest will be Denise Lunsford. So have a great week and tune in next week. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Mind and Heart Show with your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. Be sure and tune in again next Saturday morning at 9 o'clock for another edition of the Mind and Heart Show, only on WPVC-LP, Charlottesville.